This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hour three rolling along this morning. Good Monday to you. Last hour, we talked about some comments that Dick Vitale made about the transfer portal and how much he thinks it's an epidemic and it's destroying college basketball, mostly the mid-majors. I will tell you that a lot of this stuff, again, I think it comes from a passion. I think it's a rant that sometimes, when you rant about something, sometimes you're just not correct. You're just going with pure emotion, right? If you've ever had an argument with somebody, maybe you say things in the argument where it's an exaggeration of a feeling that you have. Like, you always do this. Well, that person doesn't always do that, but that's the kind of the way you present it, because there's something that's welling up inside of you, and it's allowing you to sort of make these grandiose statements in an argument. And then usually people calm down and they realize maybe they said some things they shouldn't, and however it works. And, you know, when I was younger, I was sort of bombastic in a lot of ways in defending myself in certain situations. And then when you get older, you sort of kind of go, let's trim that down a little bit. Let's trim down the theatrics. But we live in an age where theatrics sell, right? Theatrics sell. It's the videos that people see on TikTok or Reels or whatever are much more interesting when there's a lot of drama going on, right? Like, I didn't just send the steak back at the restaurant I was at. I demanded the steak be cooked, like those kind of things. So Dick Vitale is sending out a video on his impassioned plea that there's something ailing the sport that he loves, that there's over 1,000 people in the transfer portal, and there's not homes for all of them, and this doesn't allow for the, you know, recruiting. I mean, yeah, it hurts recruiting. When you think about it, if you are John Shire at Duke and you are looking at your freshman class, you want the 5-star athletes, of course, but why you can fill a lot of holes through the transfer portal. So you're monitoring two things. You're monitoring the people that are coming in, and you're also monitoring the people that want out of their current situation. And it changes a lot of things because it is a domino effect, right? It is if I'm a point guard playing at North Carolina and a better point guard becomes available to the transfer portal, my 30 minutes a night or 28 minutes a night might get reduced because the kid from Marquette may be coming in and he's better than I am. Right, it allows for the sort of, then I might want to go. And it does create this world of chaos. So in a way, and I want to make this clear, I understand, again, a guy that has been spending almost his entire life involved in the game, especially not only as a coach, but also as an analyst forever. Right? When I was in high school in the 80s, and we used to do Dick Vitale impressions in the 80s. I mean, he's been involved as a broadcaster and as a famous broadcaster for so long. But I do think in the end that it sounds to me like an extreme to say that it's destroying, right? There's an epidemic that's destroying the sport is a bold statement to be made about a sport that, again, people really only pay attention to as a collective in March. That's no knock on the sport of college basketball. But college basketball doesn't do very well selling matchups as national importance across the landscape. If I live in SEC country like I do, I may really think Wednesday night's Arkansas-Alabama game in Tuscaloosa is a big deal in January. I may go, hey, you know what, tonight, Arkansas has won 4 in a row, and Alabama's the number 4 team in the country, or the number 2 team in the country. That's going to be a good game in Tuscaloosa tonight. Can I sell that in Michigan? Can I go to Maine and sell that? Can I go to Washington and sell that? Idaho? No. I might get a few people like, I like college basketball in general. But most people go, I like my local team. I like my local region. I like the conference my local team is in. I don't really care what's going on in the SEC or the Big Ten. Wake me up when we get to conference tournament time, or more importantly, wake me up when we get to tournament time. And that's the whole thing about college basketball. College football is heading down that road, right? College football is now where it's a very regional sport. But believe me, if when number one is about to go down, anywhere in the country, people tune in. So if you have Alabama and they've been cruising right along and they've got all the talent and they've been beating everybody and look out. And one magical Saturday night, they're in Oxford and Ole Miss has got them against the ropes, or they're at home and, oh my God, Florida's beating, or whatever it may be. Just give me the scenario. It doesn't really matter. The nation tunes in. You know, one of the things that we all shared in the world of college football was Chaos Saturday. There was always one. You couldn't predict when it would happen, but there was always like one Saturday where it was like, oh boy, here we go. It all works itself out. It's why when people would talk about college football and they would go, here it is, October 10th, and there's six undefeated teams. And everyone will go, well, that's not the way it's going to be because these teams are playing each other. And, you know, it just won't be that way. Right? Because they know that college football just tends not to be that way. There's always going to be a magical night where you're going to get upset here, here, here. But it brings the collective audience together. You've got people all points America tuning into something that's chaotic. The number one team is going to go down. What is it going to look like on Sunday when the coaches and the AP votes come in, or when the committee votes come in on Tuesday night? Right. That's where college football brings in everybody. But college basketball doesn't do that. ESPN sells you Duke, North Carolina, like their regular season matchups is the greatest rivalry in sports. Right. OK, that's fine. But we don't gravitate to the same thing during the regular season in college sports. And even when you had good basketball teams like Duke, unless they were playing a Michigan Fab Five in the regular season or UNLV was doing its thing, we don't usually do that. Gonzaga has been winning forever now, right? Beating everybody. How many people across the country watched a whole Gonzaga game from start to finish on a Wednesday in January in the West Coast Conference, or a Thursday night in the West Coast Conference?
All the time.
Right? Right? So what is he...
Are they even televised?
Yeah, right. Exactly. What is he upset about? You know what he's upset... What he is upset about is right now, it is a chaotic part of the sport. It's not normal. It's not the way it used to be. He's missing... And this is, I think, is the key point. It's not that he's missing the good old days. He's missing a time where you had teams, and those teams, in some way, shape, or form, stayed intact. Right? You might lose a player one and done. You might lose a player to graduation. But for the most part, the core of the college athletes stayed intact at the school. Now that's impossible. Because, again, if I love playing at Kansas, but somebody's coming in that's better than me, I may look to get out of Kansas so I can play basketball. And here's the thing. It works for the player because NIL is prevalent. So it's not just taking playing time away from a player. You're taking money away from a player.
Or it's the Joe Burrow effect, right, where, you know, there's just a lot of talent at that one position.
That's right.
You may never get your chance. So why not take your talent somewhere else to see if you can, you know, make something of yourself? That's why I brought him up earlier, is that if Joe Burrow never transferred, we may never have Joe Burrow. If he decided to stay at Ohio State because, you know, hey, he's an Ohio kid, and that was where he, you know, he made his bread and butter in Ohio, and you're just going to stay in Ohio. Are we even talking about him? Are the Bengals in the Super Bowl?
You may get a Joe Burrow that transfers to LSU, but you don't get the year, the penultimate year that he had that led to the senior season that he ripped through and won a college national championship. Mm-hmm. You didn't get the sort of appetizer to the main course. You end up getting a Joe Burrow that's not playing, sitting out, and then you get him, and who knows what that would look like at a sacrifice of a year of eligibility. I'm sorry. I don't care who tells me. I don't care if it's a coach, Dick Vitale, Jay Billis. I don't care who tells me. There's no justification for punishing a college athlete like that. other than that the powers that be didn't want to have what we have now. There's no overriding moral principle to telling a kid, you get 4 years to play it, but if you decide to go to another school on any circumstance whatsoever, we're going to take a year of eligibility away from you. But then they started softening that up. Like, well, if you're a hard case, like your mother's dying of cancer and you want to play closer to home, we might give you an exemption, right, that you can play right away. So, but they were still in control.
But remember, for every one of those stories, we had the ones where it was like, you know, kid's grandfather was dying and, you know, he was really close to his grandfather, so he just wanted to play closer.
Yep.
And the NCAA was like, no.
No, you can't. You have to sit out.
Can't do it.
You have to sit out. Can't play. So it was, it was nothing more than the powers that be, right? We have laws in our country that are based on people, powerful people enacting them. They just don't want you to do X, Y, and Z. And then we have other laws that are just moral in nature, right? Don't steal somebody's property. You can't murder people just because you're more powerful than they are. We have laws that have a moral base. Then we have laws that are just like, nah, the government just said, nah, you can't do that because we just rather not. You'd rather not you do that. The NCAA doesn't have any moral positioning. Most of their rules were just made by the people that were powerful. And the powerful people said, you know what? When I get a player, I want to be able to use that player in any way I see fit, meaning I can play him or I can just keep him on my bench, but he's not playing for the other team in my conference. Like, and the players now have the power to change their direction. And I find it sad that we care more about a product we used to know than what we have given student athletes today to rectify the wrongs of the treatment that they've had in the past.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we got Dan Favalli from Bleacher Report coming up in 15 minutes. We'll talk NBA, but there is some good breaking news. Well, good, depending on who you are. And if you're Jalen Hurts, it's great. 5 years, $255 with $179.3 million of that guaranteed. Do the math, kids. Five and $255, $51 million a year for Jalen Hurts. No trade clause. Well done, Nicole Lynn of Clutch Sports. She's his agent. Negotiated that deal with Howie Roseman. And that's the deal that Jalen Hurts has now got. $51 million to play quarterback of the NFL.
Do you think that other guy?
Yeah, the other guy. Listen, the other guy is going to have a real. He's going to have to real come to Jesus meeting in his head
to.
He wants.
Or hire this girl.
Oh, yeah. Hire Nicole Lynn. Since you have no agent, you're not firing anybody.
No.
Hire Nicole Lynn and have her work out a contract with the Ravens for you.
Now, here's the thing. Right? I don't know if Lamar is worth $51 million a year. Because he,
right.
I mean, outside
hasn't
of
gone
an
to a Super Bowl.
Outside of an MVP, what has he done? Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, hey, this she can get you, what, 40-plus? And maybe not all of it's guaranteed, but look, no one's getting a guaranteed contract.
You know what? I think that's the thing. We keep saying this about Lamar Jackson, and I know it absolutely bears repeating when it comes to a situation like this. He's carrying a flag that doesn't seem to – that nobody else seems to want to carry with him, right? It's not like Jalen Hurts went up to his agent and said, you know what? He's fighting a battle. Let's join his battle.
Yeah.
Let's join his battle. So he's going to fight for fully guaranteed. I'll fight for fully guaranteed. When Joe Burrow's up for his deal, he'll fight for fully guaranteed. When everybody else, when Trevor Lawrence, they'll fight for fully guaranteed. Let's all come together in unison.
Do they have like a secret text thread?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
The guaranteed club.
What Lamar Jackson is feeling now is no one is on the island with him. And
yep.
So he better come back to the negotiating table going, you know, all right, let's work out a deal. Look, he can do two things this upcoming season. Well, three things in this upcoming season. Let's do three things that Lamar Jackson can do that now Jalen Hurts doesn't have to do. One, he can go back to the Ravens and work out a deal similar to this, right? 40-something million a year, you know, put him in the top 10 of paid quarterbacks in the NFL. And with a bunch of money guaranteed. So a 5-year deal, 180 or something like that guaranteed. Okay. So maybe puts him in Josh Allen territory of 43, 44 million. He could play on the $32 million non-exclusive franchise tag, run the risk of getting hurt, but in the end of it, you can go to anyone, you can go to other people. There's that second tag they would have to put on him that's much more expensive. You'd probably just be a free agent. Or you can sit out and lose $30 million at least, right? Like, what do you want to do if you're Lamar Jackson? I mean, how much is this principle are you willing to stand by at the loss of $30 million? This year, you play for the Ravens, they'll give you $32 million. Now, you get hurt, you don't get to sign a nice lucrative deal, or they're going to be cautious in signing that lucrative deal. But if you play, at least you're going to get $32 million. You're likely to get more if you come to an agreement with the Ravens. But Jalen Hurts, is this deal is showing that he's not with you, brother.
No,
he's not together.
One.
He's not locked in arms on making sure quarterbacks get fully guaranteed contracts like Deshaun Watson.
And I'll say this one kind of hurts him. I mean, for
really much, you know, a lot.
Ravens owner Steve Bisciotti.
Yep.
God, does he have his feet up on the desk today?
He absolutely does, because he would probably do 5 years, $220 million.
Yeah.
Or something like that with $175 million guaranteed, but he doesn't want to do the guaranteed deal. And now he can go to Lamar Jackson and go, okay, so let's play a game here. Why did you think you deserved a fully guaranteed deal more than Deshaun Watson? Because you accomplished more than Deshaun Watson, right? Well, you haven't accomplished what he's accomplished, and they're giving him $5 to $255 million.
Yep.
So if we're going to play the game of it's insulting that you don't get what Deshaun Watson gets, he didn't get what Deshaun Watson gets, and he actually went to a Super Bowl.
I mean, and the thing is, too, what, he's getting nearly $180 million of it's guaranteed?
Yeah.
That's enough.
179.3? Yeah, it's 180.
That's enough.
That's, yeah.
God.
You know? And it's just the principle of...
It's just football because
I understand what he's trying to do here, but it's not working.
And listen, I don't think, I mean, what the Browns did for Deshaun Watson is always going to be an outlier, and it's crazy.
That's absolute crazy.
But the whole contract was crazy. The whole thing, you know, that first year, last year, they only paid him $1 million.
Yeah.
Now this year, he'll actually be making real money. But I don't think you can ever get a fully guaranteed contract in the NFL just because the risk outweighs the reward.
And again, you can say it's collusion or whatnot, but he was not valuable enough for teams to pursue him with this non-exclusive tag. He was not valuable enough to have teams pursue him at the cost of a second pick, two first round picks, and his playing style. But the other thing is you and I brought this up before. There's a little history in another sport when Alex Rodriguez got $25 million a year.
Yeah.
He didn't set the standard at that particular moment in the 90s when he got $25 million a year. And then all of a sudden, like, oh, great, now everybody gets $25 million a year. It took a while for the rest of baseball to go, okay, we're going to catch up to a salary like that. They didn't do it overnight.
No, and for a while... There was only four teams that did.
That's right.
Maybe four. Definitely three.
And so, in the end, you didn't see other players going, well, if he gets it, I should get it. What the NFL is doing is saying, look, every now and then an owner gets crazy, but it doesn't mean we're all crazy.
Right.
Right? That's just the way it is. And we don't, by law, have to give you more money just because he gets it. That's between him and the owner of his team. But I'm the owner of this team, and I'm not giving you a guaranteed, fully guaranteed contract. The Eagles didn't seem to bend over backwards either, and I'm sure that in the negotiations, they didn't do that. So that's why you can give a guy $51 million a year to play quarterback for your team and $180 guaranteed on a $255 bill on a contract because it's not fully guaranteed. You're 100% right. Steve Bisciotti is sitting on his desk, feet up, going, "I'll win." He's playing on a deal that's better for us. He's not getting a fully guaranteed contract. Now we have the deal that gives us arsenal and our weapon against this idea.
I mean, right? it's I just can't imagine him. Yeah. Once that news came across the wire, he probably sat there and just started making phone calls.
It's funny. I wonder how quickly now we get back to the negotiating table with Lamar Jackson and the Raven.
Well, I mean,
right? Do we?
I mean, it's funny because, yeah, I mean, Jalen brought, I mean, he's done more. I mean, he hasn't won an MVP. What was he MVP last year? No, who was MVP last year? I've already forgot.
Wasn't it Jalen Hurts?
Was it Jalen Hurts?
Oh, maybe, or Patrick Mahomes? Who was it? That was Jalen Hurts.
I don't remember.
It wasn't that long ago.
I know. That's a senior right? moment right there. You know, that reminds me, okay, real quick, I mean, off subject, but we had to go and replace my my wife's phone this weekend.
Right.
And the guy was trying to say, you know, you can get a discount through AARP.
Oh, no kidding. Really?
I was out there. I'm like, I'm not ready for that yet.
Yeah, what?
Come on, slow down there, 20-year-old.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No, but I guess, you know, he's like, oh, you can get it and just waive the activation fee, but, you know, cancel it, you know, telling us all this stuff. And I was like, but it's just the fact that you went AARP. But you know what? Just had a senior moment because I can't remember who the NFL MVP was. So maybe
it was Jalen Hurts.
Maybe I am AARP worthy.
Now, so again, this is a huge contract. It's you know what it is? If this did not come with the Lamar Jackson background, it would be a great historical signing, $51 million a year,
yep, yeah.
Former MVP, Super Bowl participant, futures bright in Philadelphia, blah, blah, blah.
But when Giants, Cowboys, Commanders are hating life.
That's right. But when you put it in the context of what we've been dealing with for 2-3 months
yeah.
on the Lamar Jackson front, that even was before the March mess, people were having this conversation about Lamar Jackson in February. When you put that in the 2-month configuration of his contract,
that we were having it all last season, remember?
Yeah, it was right because he hadn't signed,
and he was, you know, but he was betting on himself.
Yeah, that's right.
That was the whole thing. He and Aaron Judge were betting on themselves, and Aaron Judge won. Lamar, I don't know so much now.
I don't think Lamar is going to win now. But again,
he could now.
He could end up with a nice contract, a nice payday. $40+ million a
yeah.
year, just like this, right? Two-something with 160 guaranteed,
yeah.
right? He could get this. He could get that, and everything would be great, and it would be one of those good quarterback, you know, pays
great
to be a
deal.
Quarterback in the NFL,
exactly.
that kind of deal. But if he looks at it, again, like the gambler that only bets 1,000 when he's used to betting 10,000, if he looks at it as losing money on the deal, he's not going to be satisfied because he's got to look at it from a fresh set of eyes, which is the guy that was in the Super Bowl that was the MVP. I'm an MVP, but you know what? The recent MVP gets this deal. I should get something close to this or around this, but I'm not going to get fully guaranteed money. It's not coming. It's not coming from anybody. All right, Dan Favalli will join us. Bleacher Report. We'll talk NBA playoffs in the 8 games this weekend. What can we expect going forward next?
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go to the Progressive guest line, Progressive Insurance. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. Dan Favalli joins us, talk NBA playoffs and Bleacher Report. We had 8 games this weekend. Some had some really intriguing storylines. Some went the way we kind of thought that we expected them to. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Good. Give us your analysis of Kings Warriors from Saturday night, which I thought was one of the more fun games to watch this weekend. What adjustments do you think are coming for both Mike Brown and Steve Kerr and how that series is played out based on what we saw in a very tight but fun game Saturday?
Yeah, I'm not sure what Mike Brown is necessarily going to do to make adjustments because a lot of the Kings' biggest issues came down to Sabonis struggling at points, and they were able to win anyway. They might do more things to try and get Sabonis some mismatches from the elbows. And then the Warriors, I think there are more complicated adjustments they probably need to make, but one of them might just be, hey, Draymond Green and Steph Curry need to play more because they got obliterated specifically in Steph Curry's minutes on the bench. And if you can't figure out a way to hang with Sacramento during, you know, Draymond playing fewer than 30 and then Steph just being on the bench in general, you're probably going to have to ratchet up their court time.
Sacramento was a 3 seed, so they're not a surprise playoff team. It's not one of those barely get in. They've earned the 3 seed. But that being said, this is a young, inexperienced playoff team. What did they show you in that game against Golden State, a team that people said, hey, they've got the switch. They'll just turn it on when the playoffs start?
I think they showed that they can hang, and they've been, you know, a fairly good clutch team all year, and they still have their defensive issues, a lot of them rearing their ugly head against the Warriors. But I think a lot of people wondered whether their offense would translate because they think that fast-paced teams aren't able to play their style in the postseason. I think the Kings showed that they can play their style and that even when things slow down, they still have those options. If Sabonis doesn't have it going, they have those options in De'Aaron Fox who can go and put pressure on defenses, put them in rotation, force them to scramble and create looks for everybody else. And so I think that's a big deal for Sacramento in the, you know, the overarching picture of this series.
The Knicks win on the road in the 4-5 matchup in the Eastern Conference. How would you define the way the Knicks have played basketball this season?
I mean, for the entire season, they've been pleasantly punchy. I think when you look at the roster...
That's a good way to put that. Yeah, that's a good way to put that.
When you look at their roster, you wouldn't expect them to be this good offensive team. And they were a really good offensive team. They were a good offensive rebounding team. They were able to jack up their three-point volume later in the season. And I think, you know, we saw some of that translate just looking at the tough shots Julius Randle and Jalen Brunson were able to hit against the Cavs. But they also do seem to have a different level defensively. And Josh Hart was spectacular for them in game one. RJ Barrett was actually pretty good defensively for them in game one as well. They're able to go to Quentin Grimes. And there's depth to this roster. You know, you didn't see Emmanuel quickly have a great game, and it bothered them a little bit, but it didn't ruin their chances against Cleveland. And so this is a team that I think everyone wondered whether they'd have a real chance against the Cavs because of the Randle ankle injury. But if he's going to look by and large like he did in game one, you have to really like their chances of sneaking out of the first round.
I'll stay with one other game on Saturday. And I know this is a game that kind of people went, it's a 2-7 whatnot. And it was a good 13-point win for the Celtics. If Atlanta shoots better, gets off to a better start, do you think this series has something to it, or is this just a game where they might not match up against a team they haven't beaten all year anyway?
Yeah, I don't really see their pathway to victory here. It could be maybe pull John Collins entirely to try and match up with Boston's smaller lineups. You can certainly count on Trae Young's offense being better, but Boston did a good job of targeting Atlanta's weak points on defense. And Clint Capella, he's a good rim protector, but the Hawks have struggled to keep guys away from the rim all season, and the Boston Celtics are actually one of the worst teams in the league at getting to the rim, but there was a parade in that direction against the Hawks. They're a team that needs some pretty big overhaul over the offseason when you look at the level of shooting on their roster, looking at their shot profile on offense, and then just needing to sort of diversify their defensive talent beyond DeJounte Murray and DeAndre Hunter and Clint Capella.
All right, there were two games on Sunday, and both have storylines that include injuries. Ja Morant's injury for the Memphis Grizzlies in their loss to the Lakers. But when Ja Morant got hurt, the Lakers were leading that basketball game. How did you think the Lakers would match up with the Grizzlies in this series, and what do you make after game one?
I thought it was going to be a bad matchup for the Lakers just because they looked rough to close the season, even as they were winning games. They were barely beating opponents that weren't really playing their top guys. But you get, you know, really big game from Austin Reeves. He was the primary ball handler down the stretch. And Rui Hachimura, who I thought was not going to be good for this series, ends up draining a bunch of wide-open threes that Memphis is going to, of course, give him. And on top of that, you have the defensive game that Anthony Davis put together. Even LeBron had some really good defensive moments in that one. I probably underestimated how well the Lakers size to match up with that of the Grizzlies, who when they're playing Xavier Tillman or Santi Aldama next to Jaren Jackson Jr., they're still not all that big. And if you remove Ja Morant from the equation, it sounds like he's going to miss some time. You have to wonder how their half-court offense is going to survive. That's been an improvement for them since the Luke Kennard trade, but Ja Morant is still very much the engine that makes it go because of the way he forces defenses, including the Lakers, to scramble in transition and the half-court.
All right, so in the other game that had involved injuries, it's Giannis with a back injury and Tyler Herro with a broken hand. Let's go to the Miami Heat for a second. With Tyler Herro, how do they play without him? What do they look like without him?
But, you know, that's really tough to envision because, one, Hero's been so available this year, and two, right, you almost don't want to have to think what their half-court offense looks like without him since it's been so bad to begin with. I think you see more stuff being run through Bam Adebayo at the elbows or him just bringing the ball up outright maybe. I think now Kyle Lowry becomes ultra-important. Victor Oladipo is kind of like falling out of the rotation. Is he someone who gets more of an extensive look? Because they need Hero's shooting and then just his creation, him getting to the mid-range, him hitting that floater has been a weapon for them when they're really quick. And it helps that Jimmy Butler had a trademark Jimmy Butler game. He actually hit some jumpers, puts pressure on the basket, finishes better than he did in the two play-in games. But Tyler Herro, to me, is no worse than their third-best offensive player, and he's their second-best offensive creator behind Butler, quite frankly. And you go up against the Bucks defense that, yeah, even if Giannis misses a game, but I think most people expect him to play, they still have the defense to really frustrate Miami's offense. So that's a big, you know, but obviously Giannis matters more to the Bucks, but losing Tyler Hero for the long term is an absolutely massive loss for Miami.
Yeah, and that gets me to my question with Giannis, because with backs, especially backs that kind of clear x-rays, we still don't really know. He could be back for game two. He could be out for a while. But that being said, is there enough with Milwaukee that they should get by an 8-seed Miami Heat team?
That's a great question that I don't even have an answer to yet. My gut says yes, because the Heat have been so bad on offense this year, and they just lost Tyler Hero. But Chris Middleton's been a little bit up and down, and we've seen how the defense can change without Giannis Antetokounmpo's basket pressure in transition in the half court. And look, Milwaukee was struggling to get in transition when Giannis was in that game. So that's how well Miami's defense was doing. And so that's a really big question mark. But I do think, especially when the Heat won't have Tyler Hero, that Milwaukee should still have enough to get out of the series, unless the Heat just flip a switch that we haven't seen them flip on offense all year.
Yeah, it's interesting because Giannis, when he hasn't played, it was like 19 games. They're 11-8, so they can without him. But most of those wins were against teams below 500. So in a seven-game series where there's adjustments being made and whatnot, if he misses significant time, it's still an open question. I feel like they should, given who they have, but I'm with you on that one. Let's get to the Clippers and the Suns. I thought, again, like Saturday night's game between Golden State and Sacramento, this was a blast. The Russell Westbrook just getting 10 rebounds and a number of them on the offensive side was impressive enough to me. But Kevin Durant only taking one field goal. How is Phoenix going to have to change that?
They can just get him the ball more. I think he even mentioned after the game that he was off the ball a lot in the corner trying to space things out for his teammates, which I do think will be an important part of their offense overall. But you probably just need to put him as more of the primary handler in actions, because Devin Booker is a lot more used to working off the ball than Kevin Durant does. And we've seen Durant off the ball before, but like Devin Booker will get off-ball movement. So can you concede some of what Devin Booker's doing? Can you change up some of the lineups? Or maybe KD is kind of just the alpha ball handler, even though those lineups have struggled. He just hasn't played in enough of games for me to say, oh, well, you can't do that because those lineups will struggle. But those are certainly things that I think, if you're Phoenix, you look at just putting the ball in his hands more, maybe getting him into a rhythm, or at least making sure that he's involved later in games.
How did you see this series? Again, it would probably still, at one game, doesn't really tell us everything, but here are a Clippers team that's not going to have Paul George in round one against a Suns team that was 8-0 when Kevin Durant was playing on the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, this game was so upside down when you look at Kevin Durant being in the corner a lot. Russell Westbrook shooting so poorly, but being so great on the offensive glass. You had Devin Booker turning in a great defensive performance. Just a lot of things maybe you wouldn't have predicted from the outset. The Clippers, look, they have the ability to switch everything against Phoenix on defense, and I think we saw that can frustrate Phoenix a little bit. And even the thing that I'll be watching for the rest of the series, more so than Kevin Durant's involvement later in games, is what does DeAndre Ayton look like? You can't be getting out-rebounded as badly as he did by Russell Westbrook and just getting beat by smaller players around the basket when you should be grabbing defensive rebounds. He continues to bail out before he gets to the basket when he gets the ball. And that made life a little easier on the Clippers. They were able to just basically throw whatever lineups they wanted out there on the front line, whether they were a little bit smaller or they stayed bigger, and Phoenix wasn't able to punish them.
Dan Favalli, Bleacher Report, NBA. Appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you so much. I know it was a busy weekend for you. Thank you for giving us your time this morning.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Take care.
And we'll continue tonight with two games in the NBA throughout the week as the first round. And again, these eight matchups sort of get sprinkled around in the next couple of weeks before we head into round number two. We'll come back, wrap up hour three as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
You know what? I'll be honest with you. If Tyler Hero did not get hurt, I could see Milwaukee in trouble, depending on Giannis's injury. I mean, if Giannis comes back in game two and is like, yeah, no problem, then of course Milwaukee should cruise and win that series. But let's say it's a back injury that he just can't seem to do anything. It's nagging and it's bothering him, and his effectiveness almost makes him irrelevant. If Tyler Hero is not hurt, then you'd go, yeah, Miami could win this thing, be an 8-1. I just can't. Without Tyler Hero, I can't see it. Milwaukee should be good enough still to beat this team. to beat this team. It's a weird, like I was telling him, like I was telling Dan Favalli, it's a weird stat. Like they're 11-8. Milwaukee's 11-8 without Giannis in the lineup, which is a winning record, right? So they can win without him. But the problem is most of those 11 wins are against state teams that stink, which you would sit Giannis out anyway, right? Like you could sit Giannis out and get, yeah, right. So in a seven-game series, though, they still should be able to beat Miami. But if Tyler Hero was playing, the Heat could give you fits.
Well, because what they could do is, you know, steal some of those.
Yeah,
you know, but I think, yeah, I think, you know, but it's just funny to me. It's like it always seems like basketball players have the back injuries.
Yeah, I know.
Is it the height?
He tried to come back. Yeah, he went out and he came back and that was it. He could not do it. So, yeah, it's crazy. Nevertheless, the NBA playoffs rolling on tonight. So the only two I really didn't get into them with was Denver and Brooklyn. The Brooklyn Sixers series and the Denver-Minnesota series. Because, yeah, whatever. I'm sorry. Just
call me when it's over.
Listen, I know that you can lose a first-round game. It doesn't matter what you lose by, right? Lose by 40. Lose by 39. Lose by 21. It don't matter. Like, you're coming back. You're refreshed. You're only down 1-0. There's no point differential you have to make up. But I just don't think Minnesota is going to come anywhere near threatening Denver in this opening round. Nowhere near it. I think the Nuggets win this series in five at the most. And I think Brooklyn just has – there's nothing that Brooklyn can do to beat Philadelphia. I don't think they have the personnel to beat Philadelphia. I don't think they have the coaching that can beat Philadelphia, and I like Jacques Vaughn, but I don't think that's happening. Everything else is just I may still like the perennial favorite team, but I might be interested. Boston and Atlanta, I don't. I think Boston wins that series. They won all three games in the regular season. They won the game the other night. I don't think they match up. I think Atlanta matches up well with Celtics. So that, but the problem that I have in that game, the reason it's not as cut and dry. It's because Atlanta came back in that second half, and they made it more interesting than they probably should have, and they were terrible from the perimeter. And I'm thinking, man, if Atlanta hits their threes and they don't get off to a slow start, maybe they're rolling around in this one a little bit closer. But Miami and Milwaukee, that's got injury concerns. Clippers and Suns is a 4-5. The Golden State-Sacramento series is a blast. We'll see how the Golden State responds. Like he said, maybe Mike Brown doesn't make adjustments, but Steve Kerr is going to have to make adjustments on the amount of minutes that Steph Curry and Draymond Green are playing. Also, how they're going to guard De'Aaron Fox. I mean, there's a whole bunch of questions that Golden State has to answer, but that's fascinating to me. And then the Lakers-Grizzlies. I like the Grizzlies. I like the Grizzlies. I watch more of them than any team in the NBA, but I was not surprised, even after Ja Morant went down, that the Lakers were leading that game. The Lakers played good, really good basketball in that game. So this one could be really fun, too. There's a lot of cool first-round matchups.
We got
an opening view of it this weekend. Hopefully it'll last that way.
I mean, you almost want to thank Giannis for getting hurt because it does make it a little more interesting. Yeah.
It does. And again, who knows what the extent of the injury is going to be? Like I was telling him, like a back injury is so weird because you can't really quantify it, right? It's not like if you hurt your hand, you go this many weeks. If you get a back injury, it could bother you forever.
I know. He could play in game two and it looks fine and normal. And then game three pops up and he's just stiff as a board and can't do anything again. And game four, you know, it's a weird, weird injury.
It's a very weird injury.
Or a nagging injury, I guess. I don't know what you want to call it.
Peg it. So they're leaving it wide open. X-rays were clear, so they know he doesn't have anything structurally wrong.
Yeah.
That's the other key to this. But it doesn't mean he's not going to have pain. He's not going to be able to do certain things. And, you know, you're not going to send Giannis out there with a bad back. If he could be that ineffective. I mean, it's not like, you know, like a quarterback's playing with a bum ankle and you just tape it up like Patrick Mahomes did, right?
Yeah, you can't tape up a back.
You just can't do that with a back. Like if a back hurts, you're not jumping, you're not moving to the basketball, you're not lateral shifting, you're not doing any of that stuff. You're frozen. You're done. You're laying down. Look at Larry Bird. Remember when Larry Bird had all those back injuries in the late 80s and 90s?
Lay on the stomach on the court?
They did everything they could to try to get him out on that court. He just could not play. You can't. It's so difficult. But again, we don't know the severity of it. So he could be out the whole series. He could be out. That's it. He could have been out just one game.
Could have been out game one yesterday.
Right? Yesterday could be it. You might see Giannis pour in 39 points in game two and be like, all right, guess he's okay now.
Yeah, he's making up for
took some ibuprofen and he's fine. Right?
Oh, come on.
Or Dones. What do you take? Dones? Is that the back? Is that the back medicine they sell over there?
He'll probably get a straight cortisone shot.
You're right. Ramp. There you go. So goodness. But yeah, and then the NHL playoffs start tonight. So I'm really curious about Boston. There was a team in the '80s, the Sixers in the '80s, when they got Moses Malone. Moses Malone famously said fo, right? That's how they were gonna win a championship. Four straight. They lost one game and on the route to a sweep in the finals in 83 and won the championship. I wonder how many games are the Bruins going to lose before they hoist the Stanley Cup? Because, it's not being Nostradamus to call this. Who is going to give a 65-win hockey team trouble in a seven-game series? Is it going to be Florida in round one? I doubt it. Could be Tampa Bay, maybe? I don't know. Anybody from the West? The Avalanche, Vegas, the Kings, Edmonton. People like Edmonton. Bay, by the way, there's only two teams that are carrying the flag for Canada in the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, and that is Winnipeg and Edmonton. That's it, kids. Isn't Toronto in it? Yep, Toronto's in it. So yeah. Three. Toronto, Winnipeg, and Edmonton.
Yeah, not
there
a chance.
There you go. Those are the three.
Not happening.
Yeah, Toronto was
give it
second.
Another, been 26 years now? No, yeah. Longer.
No, it's been, let's do the math. 90, it's 30.
So it's 30
93.
Years. 93 was the last.
Montreal.
God, man.
30 years since, that is a generation and a half. 30 years.
Yeah, Canada, I'm really starting to feel bad for Canada. God, I really am.
Like we do this bit every year where we talk about all the cities that hoisted the Stanley Cup in the 30 years that don't usually have a Stanley Cup parade. Like that cup has seen the sunshine of Tampa a couple of times, right? Like they saw it was in NASCAR country when Carolina won. Let's see, who else won the Stanley Cup? Dallas won the Stanley Cup. Anaheim. The Kings a couple of times, I think, right? A couple times for the Kings. Yeah, it's been around the country.
Will a desert team win one before Canada?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Because we got Vegas and Phoenix.
Vegas and Phoenix.
Phoenix might win one before Canada, and Phoenix doesn't even play in an arena.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's the sad part. Like, it's got to be sad for Canadian hockey fans to look and go, like, they don't even know what that is.
They don't even care.
They don't even care about, like, we care about it. It would have been like if Happy Gilmore won the Masters. Right, like, what is this, a green jacket?
Don't you remember his line?
I don't remember his line.
Oh, his line when they were talking about a green jacket, gold jacket, who gives a?
That's right, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and otherwise there's other golfers like, you don't even know what that is.
You don't know the history behind it.
Meanwhile, you've got fans in Raleigh, North Carolina celebrating the Stanley Cup. Tampa Bay celebrating the Stanley Cup. You know, like I find it funny. I mentioned it last week. I find it funny that people in Denver were like, what's this? We get a hockey team and a championship in the same year? Wow. I had a friend of mine named Howie, and he was when I got to Denver in 2001, 2002. So I came in after they had won the Stanley Cup. And my friend Howie said to me, he was at the station I was working at, and he goes, hey, here's the thing. I'm from New York, so I really know, like, how hard it is to win the Cup given the Rangers because I'm a Rangers fan, and, you know, now it can die in peace, the 94 team. He goes, people here, he goes, they think the Cup, winning the Cup is so easy, they should do it every year. And I'm like, wow. He goes, yeah. He goes, they came into 96, won the Cup. They won it in 2004. He goes, they were upset in 97 and 98 that they didn't win the Cup. Because they won it the first year that Quebec landed in Colorado in the mid-90s. 96, I think, was the year they won the Cup.
But see, it's funny. I mean, at least if Colorado wins it, it makes sense. I mean,
Denver's kind of a wintry town.
But
hockey town.
You know, the fact that Tampa won the two previous ones in Florida.
Tampa's won it.
You got
right?
Kings of winning it twice since
St. Louis
then.
Blues in that glorious
St. Louis
song.
Blues. Washington Capitals, are they a hockey town?
Exactly. Love it. Completely. That's great. So good luck, Bruins, on your route to capturing the Cup after 65 wins. See you tomorrow.